A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with George Brockler, a former district attorney out in Colorado, hopefully future district attorney in Colorado as well. He had a interesting column the other day talking about the case of the Crumbleys, you know, the parents in Michigan, the parents of the school shooter who were convicted of involuntary manslaughter. And he is concerned that Colorado lawmakers are going to be aiming at gun-owning parents in the near future. We talk about that. We also had a chance to talk about the, well, you can't call it a defeat of the gun ban bill in Colorado because the sponsor asked for the bill to be killed. But so-called assault weapons ban, not going anywhere in the Colorado legislature. After clearing the House, today is actually the last day of the legislative session in Colorado, and that is at least one gun control bill that won't be going to Governor Polis' desk. There are several others, and George Brockler had an opinion on those as well. Take a look and a listen. George, thanks so much for coming back on the show. It's good to see you again, sir.
Thanks for having me again. Great weather out there.
Yeah, and I want to talk to you about your recent column, but before we get into this, I've got to ask your thoughts. We just saw announced yesterday that the sponsor, one of the sponsors of the so-called assault weapons bill in Colorado that would have banned the sale and manufacture of many common semi-automatic rifles, pistols, and shotguns, for that matter. She decided to pull the bill, asking it to be killed in committee rather than coming up for a vote. I'm curious your take on this and what, if any, scuttlebutt you've been hearing from the Capitol about this decision.
One, I think it's a great thing. I wish that we had enjoyed more successes on the Second Amendment bills that showed up in this legislative session. You know, I've lived in Colorado more than half a century. I've never seen anything like this. And I keep telling myself every year, well, this is it. I mean, this is the high water mark. They've done all they can do to the Second Amendment. And they keep finding ways to keep digging away at it. This one, I bet when the dust settles, what we're going to find is that Governor Polis had a hand in reaching out behind the scenes and saying, I don't want this on my desk in this form at this time right now. And that's how it died. I appreciate all the efforts of our great 19 members of a 65-member House of Representatives and our near super minority in the Senate. I think those are hard chargers. Those are the Spartans at the hot gates, you know. But at the end of the day, they could not have derailed this thing. It really did, in my opinion, take the governor reaching out and saying, don't do this. And they did what he said.
Yeah. Do you think that was a political decision? I mean, I've seen, you know, so many news stories say, well, Governor Polis reluctant to sign this. But, you know, the governor, I've not seen any statements from him or his office saying that they object in theory to a ban on modern sporting rifles. So was this politics at work, you think?
100%. I think this is a governor who tries to maintain the image of being a moderate, if not libertarian, leaning moderate. Mm-hmm. But if you look at all of the anti-Second Amendment bills that he has signed since he's been in office, you can't come to the conclusion that he's a big proponent of the Second Amendment. He probably leans a little bit more towards it than the rest of his caucus, but that isn't really saying very much.
Right.
So in this case, I think this is a guy who eyes the future, his future. This is a guy, by the way, too, Kim, you have to know this too. When he got elected, he didn't do it through the party. He ran as a Democrat, but the party didn't want Jared Polis to be the governor. But Jared Polis, who has a kajillion dollars, said, I don't need you. I'm going to go ahead and do this myself. He paid for his own infrastructure, his own door knocking apparatus, and he won the day. So for him to turn on his own progressives and the Democrats on bills that he thinks might hurt him in the future. Yep. I absolutely think it was political 100%.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, honestly, you know, listen, you just talked about the near super minority of Republicans in the Senate, the challenge in the House as well. But this is something that probably not a lot of Democrats would want to run on in November. I mean, if you pass a semi-auto ban, that's going to come up and that's going to hurt you in swing districts, in marginal districts. You know, maybe if you're running in deep blue Denver, you don't have a problem defending that vote. But a lot of other representatives and senators, I think, would have really struggled to explain that vote to voters.
Well, I agree with that, but I'd say this. It didn't cause the legislature to hesitate on almost every other bill they had to whittle away at the Second Amendment. I don't think it will give them any pause after November. And I think that the way that our districts have been drawn and the shift, at least in voter turnout in the last couple cycles have been, there just aren't that many swing districts that are gettable for Republicans. And it would require organizations to have a big truckload of money to show up and remind voters, hey, this person tried to keep you from exercising your Second Amendment rights. And I'm not convinced the money's there either. So, you know, I'm disappointed. This won't be the last time this happens. This probably won't even be the last time you and I talk about a bill like this, because next year it starts all over again.
Well, and so that brings us to your column at the Colorado Springs Gazette. Colorado lawmakers next will go after parents. And we've already seen the sponsor of the gun ban bill say that she's going to bring it back next year. But how concerned are you that we're going to see lawmakers in Colorado try to put a measure in place like in Michigan, where, you know, the parents of juvenile offenders could be charged with crimes up to manslaughter for the actions of their children, as we saw with the Crumblies there in Michigan?
Yeah, two things about that. One, I'm very concerned, and we'll talk about why I think that is and where I think the legislature is going in a sec. But I want to say the Crumley's case was so factually unique and, in my opinion, indefensible from the standpoint of even responsible gun owners. I get teaching your kids about firearms, and I get teaching them to hunt and taking them to the range. I've taken my kids to all the firearms familiarity classes and the range stuff. But you got a 14-year-old kid who shows some behavioral issues and you provide them with a handgun for his birthday and then lose sight of where that handgun is or fail to secure it. Those are tough things, especially when you're sitting next to the backpack with the gun in it unwittingly in the room before you cut him loose to go back to class. By the way, we could go on all day about the fact that the school did not suspend this kid.
Yeah.
For what I mean, they're on the hook too. But I think here what we've seen is this thing got enough national attention that our legislature sees this as another opportunity to discourage exercise of the Second Amendment. And I think that's where they've gone. They tried all of their, we're going to ban this kind of gun. We're going to mandate the background checks. We're going to do all these things. But now they've moved into how can we discourage people from exercising their Second Amendment rights? And the way that they do it is to create such significant liability that people at some point, either consciously or subconsciously, think, maybe it's just not worth the risk. And so, you know, we have a law that says if you have a gun in your car, but you don't secure it, and some ne'er-do-well criminal breaks in there and steals the gun, well, you're in trouble. We had a corollary bill that the Republicans offered that said, how about this? If you steal a gun from someone's car, that's an aggravated offense. Let's go get the criminals who are stealing the guns. And the same progressive legislature said, nah, we're not interested in that. We just want to discourage the lawful owners. We said a year or two ago that in your house, if you don't secure your firearm and it ended up getting used for something bad, you're on the hook. We've got a bill that says you're going to have to get liability insurance if you own a firearm, because goodness knows what could happen. These are all incremental steps towards creating a culture in this society where our future generations, not you and me, Ken, our future generations look at gun ownership as just a giant risk. And is it really worth it?
I think that's exactly right. And listen, going back to what you were saying about the Crumblies, I think you're also correct that this was, a unique circumstance. And not only, again, did you have the deaths of high school students, so this was, again, a very high profile shooting. But some of what came out, I mean, listen, I'm a dad, too. Hearing some of the details of what this kid was saying. And the just sort of dismissiveness of the parents when the kid is asking for help. Hey, can I see somebody? Can I talk to somebody? And not getting a response. Again, I don't know that it rises to the level of manslaughter. But it certainly, listen, nobody's going to nominate the Crumblies for Parent of the Year. Right. No. And I think all of us as parents can look and say, OK, well, if my kid is struggling, if my kid is reaching out, I don't react that way. I'm not so, absorbed in my own life that I'm just, brushing off their concerns and their troubles. But, going back to increasing the liability for exercising your Second Amendment right, I think that's absolutely spot on. And as you say, it's not just a bill that might hold parents responsible for the actions of their children. It is about You know, imposing that liability, treating you, the victim of a crime, if your gun gets stolen, as a criminal yourself, right? It's flipping the script, and it's making the exercise of a fundamental civil right disfavored by not just the dominant Democrat culture in Colorado, but by the law itself. That is going to have a chilling effect on the right to keep and bear arms. I mean, that's by design. It's going to have that sort of effect.
I agree. And I'm glad you used the phrase chilling effect, because we normally hear that phrase used in conjunction with a different amendment. And that's the First Amendment. And if you can envision a legislature taking the same approach to the freedom of expression that they do to the Second Amendment, you can imagine what that would do to our ability to communicate, have conversations, disagree with government. If you simply took out guns and built in some sort of expression or First Amendment piece of this thing, we'd be appalled. We'd say, absolutely not. You're going to freeze people out from wanting to say things publicly. But with the Second Amendment, the other side goes, oh, this makes total sense. We're just keeping people safe. We're just providing a road for accountability and responsible gun ownership. But they would never apply it to the First Amendment. Why is that?
Yeah, well, because again, they see, I won't even say they see the Second Amendment as a second class right. They still don't acknowledge that it's a right. I just ran across a couple of pieces from Slate magazine today where they're talking about the Heller decision and complaining that the Heller, you know, the court got it wrong in Heller. There is no right to keep and bear arms. That question is settled, but not in the hearts and minds of the gun control activists, right? And their political allies. They firmly believe the court got it wrong. And if they could take this right away from us tomorrow, they absolutely would. That's my belief.
They've started that conversation. They also see it as some sort of, if it was ever necessary, that necessity has long since abated. Like, I get it. When we were trying to free ourselves of King George III, it made a lot of sense. But it's 2024, and we have police and sheriffs and a well-intentioned government that really just wants to protect everybody. And that's what you hear in their conversations when they talk about firearms. They talk about it in terms of, do you really need to have that? Do you really need to have a semi-automatic rifle with a certain capacity? They would never use the language of need with the First Amendment. Nobody ever says, do you really need to say that about President Trump? Do you really need to run that story about that? No one ever talks in those terms. It's like, right. Hey, that's a right. And we're willing to tolerate a bunch of extremism on one side on the First Amendment, but we're not willing to tolerate just normal stuff on the Second Amendment.
That's right. And this, again, is, I mean, this is, you know, the work of our generation, not just in Colorado, but across the country. And, you know, one of the things that I appreciate about your experience is, I mean, you've actually prosecuted several very high profile crimes, including the Aurora Theater shooting. And you write about this in your column, talking about how the killers in these incidents, from Columbine to the STEM school shooting at Highland Park, how those killers got their guns, right? Because again, this is something that supposedly is pretty important, right? If we're going to hold parents accountable, if we're going to try to say, okay, well, let's expand this universe beyond just the shooter, when we can look at how to stop these types of attacks. I think your experience is really interesting, because as you talk about, you know, most of these guns were either acquired legally, or the law was clearly broken, right? In the case of Columbine, where you had straw purchasers, the STEM school shooting at Highland Park, where Kendra Castillo was murdered. You say the 16 and 18 year olds broke into a parent's safe with an axe and a crowbar to steal four weapons and ammunition. You know, that alone, George, I mean, when you think about this, the idea that, okay, well, there's this one size fits all policy that every gun owner should follow, regardless of whether or not you have kids in the home. You got to keep your guns locked up, ammunition stored separately. Even if you do that, somebody who is committed to carrying out an attack like this is going to figure out a way to do it.
Yeah, that's 100% right. I mean, look, the theory behind the progressive move towards whittling away the Second Amendment, it can be distilled into this. If we disarm everybody, then we've disarmed evil. But that's not true. All you end up doing is just disarming the law-abiding innocent people who will become the targets of evil. If you look at what happened in Aurora, you know, Tom Sullivan, who's a state senator here, and I have nothing but respect for this guy for what he went through. And we disagree on a whole bunch of legislations and policy that he pushes. But There's no doubt that this man is a victim, as his son was murdered in that theater. But his response was to try to push legislation about guns that could have made no difference in Aurora. We look at things that took place after Aurora, like magazine capacity limits. It would have made no difference in Aurora. That guy brought 700 rounds of ammunition with him to the theater. If you made him have smaller magazines, he'd have just had more magazines, right? If you said, hey, you couldn't have an assault rifle, he'd have just brought more handguns, or he'd have brought something else. This is a dude who invented a bomb system for his apartment to blow it up, right? He was not going to be discouraged by the law. If you look at STEM, as you pointed out, these two broke into a safe with an axe and a crowbar. What was dad supposed to do differently in that situation? If you look at any of these other major crimes that we've seen here in Colorado, almost none of the laws that are being offered today would have had any impact in preventing them. And that should be an indication to these people that instead of saying, let's magic away all the guns and somehow that will address what evil will do, we should say, can we put ourselves in a position to deter, but defend ourselves from evil?
Well, I absolutely. But I mean, look what's gone on in Colorado over the past 10 years. I mean, and as a former district attorney and one who's running for DA right now, you're well aware, right? So 2013, you get the magazine ban, you get universal background checks. Since then, you've added red flag laws, you've repealed firearms preemption. And then, you know, all the bills that have been passed this year. And violent crime since 2012, correct me if I'm wrong, George, it's increased in Colorado by more than 75%.
It's increased a ton.
All of those gun laws on the books.
Despite all of those gun laws on the books. Now, we have seen some fluctuation in the post-COVID era, but the numbers are still ridiculous compared to what we were seeing before. You know, the other thing that I think that you started to see back in 2012 after Aurora with we had universal background checks, magazine capacity limits, and these other things, is you started to see, and this happened nationally, locally elected officials like sheriffs and district attorneys saying, well, I'm not going to prioritize that crime. In fact, some have said, I'm not even going to prosecute that crime. I don't think it's consistent with my community's values. And frankly, I don't think it's constitutional. Now, without debating the rightness or wrongness of the constitutionality argument, the rule of law piece, what you've seen the response from the progressives is, oh my gosh, if there are pockets of conservative communities in Colorado that won't do our bidding and do what we think the way we think, then we're going to empower the state attorney general, who is a hyper-partisan progressive, will empower him to do it. And the best example of that is this disastrous red flag law that we passed in 2019. Last year, the legislature empowered the attorney general to go seek extreme risk protection orders against citizens. What in the hell does that guy know about anything to get him to go into court and say, Cam, you're unhinged, you shouldn't be able to exercise your Second Amendment rights? The attorney general? Are you kidding me? But that's the direction we're going to go. We're going to start to see the legislature pull more things away from local DAs and sheriffs and give it more to the state troopers, to the attorney general. They created a state force within a police force, almost within the Colorado Bureau of Investigations, to just investigate gun crimes. I mean, you can see the direction they're going here. They don't want local control if it disagrees with them.
Well, that's the thing, right? So, yeah, we'll repeal the firearms preemption law. So you can have gun control laws that are more restrictive than state laws, right? But if you try to use the discretion that is afforded to you as sheriff or as DA to not prosecute these offenses, these minor offenses, these paperwork crimes, yeah, as you say, we're going to take that authority away from you. We're going to give it to the attorney general, because one way or the other, damn it, these gun control laws are going to get enforced.
That's exactly right. I think they figured out the Supreme Court of the United States at the moment is the last place they want to go. So if they can win at the local and state level by doing things here, either to discourage people from exercising in the front end or empowering the state to come in and then exercise its authority, its new authority, to come in and crack down on folks on those same laws, it's a win for them. And I think they're playing a long game here, Cam, that we're not seeing. And that is, they know that education about the Constitution and our history has been horrific for the past couple of generations. They're going to create a generation of people. They're going to end up being voters who simply don't value the Second Amendment and who think, because teachers have told them this and society has reinforced it, that guns aren't necessary. In fact, they're more of a risk than they are a positive. And that's how they're going to attack this industry. They don't need to win today. They're trying to win 20, 30, 40 years from now.
So how do, and I don't necessarily expect you to have the magic answer here, but how do you think we can best combat that? How do we start to think long-term? And what does that look like in practice?
Well, I mean, the educational piece we have been trying to tackle now forever. And in Colorado, mercifully, we have things like charter schools, very robust charter schools. People homeschool a ton out here. And once you break yourself away from that big government approach to the idea of what should our history be, you know, when we teach it to the kids, as opposed to what was it, that helps. I think what you need is to encourage families to embrace the Second Amendment in this way. Like, I own handguns, right? I don't own any rifles, but I do own handguns, and I take that seriously. I don't carry all the time, but I have a concealed carry permit. But what I did was to take my kids to the range as a responsible parent to kind of demystify this. And Cam, you and I talked about this a while ago. Here's where that paid off. STEM. 5 years ago yesterday was STEM, right? Same day of the week, 3 days before the end of school. All five of the heroes in that classroom, the people that took action and took on and attacked their attackers, had familiarity with firearms. Kendrick Castillo, he'd gone out shooting with his dad. He knew all about guns. Josh Jones, Brendan, but all of these folks, the teacher in there was a concealed carry holder. Okay, so when you look at that, what you see is these are people that understand both the risks and the potential rewards with firearms. They were unafraid in a way that kept them from acting. Everybody else, and I might have been in this group too, fled. Who knows what happens in that situation? These five said, no way. And they took that on because I think they recognize what it is. So to answer your question, I think it falls on us. If it's sons and daughters, nieces and nephews or whatever, maybe it's your scouting. All my kids are scouts. You take them to a place where you demystify the firearm, where they understand it as a tool. They understand it as dangerous and deadly, but it's not to be feared if it's in the right hands and handled the right way and kept in the right way. And I think over time then, you take away that narrative that, you know what the problem is, it's the guns. And you reinforce the idea that it's not the guns, it's the hand that's holding it. That's the problem.
Absolutely. George Brockler, thank you so much for your time, sir. Listen, if folks want to help out, you are running for district attorney in the 23rd Judicial District. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Brand new. First one in 60 years Colorado's at.
Wow. All right. So if folks want to help out, do you have a campaign website or anything like that?
Just Venmo me money. No, I'm kidding. We do have a website. It's georgebrockler.com, traditional spelling. No, I'm kidding. It's the last name is B-R-A-U-C-H-L-E-R. Click this button right here. I'm kidding. Georgebrockler.com. You can find out all about me. You can ask me questions there. And if you want to support us, man, we love that too.
Well, listen, I really appreciate you carving out a few minutes to talk with us today. I know you're a very busy guy this time of year, but hopefully we get a chance to do this again soon, because I really enjoy talking with you.
Love what you do out there, Cam. Keep it going.
All right. Back at you. Thanks, George.
See you, sir.
My thanks to George for joining us on the program, and I am looking forward to having him back again very soon. All right. Before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for just a moment. At the very heart of our democracy lies a principle that we hold sacred, free speech. It's the cornerstone that supports every freedom we cherish. Yet in today's digital age, discussions about our wealth, our rights, and our future are being silenced or overshadowed in mainstream narratives, leaving many feeling voiceless in conversations that are crucial to our financial independence and security. That's where Wealth Protection Research steps in, armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research is not a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech, committed to giving a voice to the silenced. Wealth Protection Research tirelessly seeks out financial experts. These are the voices that challenge prevailing narratives, especially as we navigate the uncertainties of the 2024 election. Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 Election Wealth Protection Report. This free report highlights the three best ideas for protecting and growing your money heading into the 2024 election. It contains ideas that the mainstream media won't touch, and listeners can get it completely free. Just text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. If you believe in the sanctity of free speech and the importance of financial freedom, then act now. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy of this 2024 Election Protection Report. It's time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear the ideas the establishment doesn't think you can handle, and to take control of our financial destinies. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. All right. So let's turn our attention now to today's recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Fort Wayne, Indiana. And this headline, well, if you're like me, it's going to send your blood pressure soaring. TJ Maxx attempted kidnapping suspect on probation for 2023 forcible robbery of a 15-year-old girl. That's right. Just last year, 19-year-old Caleb Rush was convicted or pled guilty. He pleaded guilty to robbery in that case. Of course, he did. 98% of our cases end up in plea bargains. He got a 3-year sentence after pleading robbery or pleading guilty to robbery. Records show he tackled this young girl and then began reaching into her pockets to grab things, but was unsuccessful. The girl's sister and a stranger actually intervened when the 15-year-old began screaming, and Rush then ran away. So even though he got this, I said it was a 3-year-long executed sentence. No, it's basically a year of probation. That's essentially what Rush received for this robbery plea last year. And now he's accused of trying to kidnap a girl last month at the Northwest Shopping Center in Fort Wayne, Indiana. According to court records, days after a 13-year-old reported a man walked up behind her and tried to pull her away at TJ Maxx, Russ was arrested. He's now facing 3 charges: battery, confinement, and attempted kidnapping. Victim and witnesses gave varying information on what the suspect looked like, but when police released surveillance video of the suspect, multiple people identified Rush as the suspect here. Police interviewed the 13-year-old the day that Rush was arrested. She detailed her account of the attack, saying, "He tried to, like, take me. He grabbed me and tried to drag me. I screamed, and he ran." Now, the 13-year-old was unable to identify Rush as her attacker during a photo array. But when police took Rush into custody, following reports of a suspicious person at another store, he allegedly admitted to being at the TJ Maxx the day the teenager reported a man grabbing her. Police say that Rush told them he was high on methamphetamine and walking around the home goods section of the store when he began seeing faces, one of them being his aunt, and he jumped at her. He allegedly told officers, "I don't remember seeing the girl. I don't remember none of that. I just remember seeing some faces in front of me and jumping at them. They were as clear as day." Yeah. Okay, so you're innocent until proven guilty, right? Let's acknowledge that here. But can we also acknowledge, first of all, if he admitted to being high in methamphetamine, that also was a violation of his probation. But again, why was this original sentence, robbing a 15-year-old girl, physically assaulting her while doing so, why was this treated with such a slap on the wrist to begin with? Why just a year's worth of probation? Now, again, given the current charges that young Mr. Rush is facing, he's likely to spend some time behind bars here. But, you know, I mean, odds are he's going to bond out at some point before trial. And God knows what happens between now and then. I hope he's able to stay out of trouble. But again, this is what happens when there are no consequences for violent crimes. People get the idea that it's no big deal. They don't have to change anything about their life. They don't have to change their behavior. And they continue down this wrong road. Today's Armed Citizen story from Portsmouth, Virginia, where a man was acquitted of murder after a judge ruled that he acted in self-defense. So this was not a case where, you know, police investigated and said, all right, no charges should be filed here. Oh, no. Javon Jamal Sims had faced charges of second-degree murder as well as illegal use of a firearm for the incident that happened back in July of 2021, where Kamaral Maz was shot and killed at an apartment in Portsmouth. When police arrived at the apartment that day, the 37-year-old Maz was on the floor of the apartment. He had a gun in his waistband. He had cash in his hand. Javon Sims, who was 25 at the time, told police that he shot Maz. But his story really hadn't changed between then and now. He maintained that this was self-defense. When he took the stand during his murder trial, Sims told the judge that he had gone to his girlfriend's apartment that day to pick up their 11-month-old son. While he was there, he said Maz came into the apartment unannounced, closed the door behind him, claimed that the girlfriend owed him money. She disputed that. He said he wasn't leaving until he got it. When Sims was talking to Maz, the girlfriend then got her gun as well as some cash to give Maz just to get him to go away. Again, told him to leave. Javon Sims says that Maz was reaching for his own gun when Sims grabbed his girlfriend's gun and shot Maz 7 times. It was later determined that the pistol that Maz had on his hip was not loaded. The judge, according to Sims' defense attorney, determined that the case fit under the state's castle doctrine. You've got the right to use force, including deadly force, to protect yourselves against someone that's in your home. In this case, Maz was not supposed to be there. Maz was threatening the individuals inside that apartment. And again, when he reached for that firearm, Sims had the right to protect himself, his girlfriend, and presumably the 11-month-old child that was in the apartment as well. Not sure why this case ended up going to trial here, given the questions, but again, the judge in this case has determined that Javon Sims was acting in self-defense, and he no longer has second-degree murder charges hanging over his head. Finally today, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, a Cleveland, Ohio man who's being called a hero after saving a baby from a burning home in the city. 62-year-old John Stikovich was on his way to work when he said he saw smoke coming out of a home. And rather than just keep driving down the road, he decided to pull over and stop to see if he could help. He said the mother was sitting on the lawn with her one baby, and I asked her if she was all right. And she said, "My baby's still in the house." And I was thinking to myself, oh my God, I have to save the baby. That's how it's going to be. So he immediately ran to the side door of the home. He kicked it in, but he said the smoke and flames were too heavy. So he went around to the back of the house and maybe he made it his way through an open door to the kitchen. He still couldn't find the child. So he said he came back outside and asked the mom, "Where's the baby?" And she said, "Next to the kitchen by the baby gate." So he runs back into the house a second time. First responder still not there. Drops down, crawling under the smoke as best he could, felt around. He reached the childproof gate. He said, "It was getting so bad in there, I was getting ready to leave because I still couldn't find the baby. And then the baby cried or made a sound. And I'm thinking to myself, the baby's right here." So I just lurched forward. My arm went across his leg. I grabbed him by the leg. I pulled. And then we were both out. Amazing. According to a News Nation, firefighters say if Stekovich had not acted as fast as he did, the child would not be alive today. Cleveland Fire Department spokesman Lieutenant Mike Norman says he risked his life to bring that baby out. He did an amazing job this morning. Two firefighters actually injured battling the blaze, one of them trapped under debris after the front porch collapsed. He ended up being rescued by his coworkers. Stikovich runs his own repair business, said his only previous experience dealing with fires was when he was working on demolition projects. But he said his actions on Monday were just the result of raw instincts and determination. He said, "I feel wonderful that I could save that baby. Mother doesn't have to mourn her baby. That baby gets to live today. Everybody's just calling and saying how great of a job it was." He said, "But I mean, I'd do it for anybody. It doesn't matter. And I hope that somebody would do it for me." Well, I hope that John Stikovich never is in the position where he needs to have that particular deed paid forward. But in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to save the life of a child, a stranger to him, when he could have simply driven down the road and let somebody else deal with that problem, the smoke coming out from the roof. John Stikovich, yeah. Thanks for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. We'll see you back here tomorrow. We're going to be talking, at least on paper right now, we have scheduled Rob Dorr from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, and it's going to be another twofer, I guess a twofer to a Thursday. David Tran with the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine going to be with us as well. We're going to be talking about litigation in Maine over one of the new gun control laws signed by Governor Janet Mills. Be sure to tune in for that tomorrow. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. If you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member as well. You'll get exclusive content, an ad-free experience, the ability to comment on stories, which will also be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism we're doing at Bearing Arms. And that is critically important. Use the promo code SAVEAMERICA. You get 50% off your VIP or VIP Gold membership. It's our way of saying thanks for showing your support because it truly is needed and necessary at this time. So thanks again. Enjoy your Hump Day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.